the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
With Jimmy Himes, I'm John Wilkerson, and we have a lot coming your way between now and the time that we step aside, which will be just before 7 o'clock. We look forward to catching up with Vol for Life Andre Lipsius of the Tigers organization. But right now, it's your chance to pick up a golden attaboy as that hangs in the balance with tonight's trivia challenge, the Sports Fix at 6. What is the question this evening, Jimmy?
John, it came to me when Sean Payton was in isolation due to the coronavirus, and they flashed up there. He's the fifth winningest active coach in the NFL. So I thought, okay, let's name the other four. Sean Payton is the fifth winningest coach active in the NFL. Name the four NFL coaches that are active that have more wins than Sean Payton.
656-9900, 656-9900, *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. So if you would, repeat the question again.
Sean Payton has the fifth most wins of any active coach in the NFL. Name the other four coaches that are ahead of Sean Payton in terms of NFL wins. And those coaches are active. And also, you know, they've done fairly well as far as Super Bowls.
Let's start with Eli. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Eli.
Hey, is it Sean Payton, Bill Belichick, John Harbaugh, Andy Reid, and we'll just throw out Doug Peterson.
Okay, now, of course, Peyton is fifth. We're looking for the other four. You named Peyton, but let's take him out of the equation. You got two right. You got two right.
Okay. Eli, we sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Roger joins us next. Hello, Roger.
Hey, gentlemen. I'm going to go with Belichick, Harbaugh, Reed, and Ron Rivera.
You got two right.
Ah, okay.
Started your first and third guesses were on the money.
We sure do appreciate it, Roger. Have a great night. Let's go to Bob. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Boy, you know, I'll say about this. Let's see. I was going to say pretty much everything that the last guy said, so I'm just going to hang up and listen. Thank you.
All righty. Well, we sure do appreciate it. Let's go next to Greg. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Greg.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, take a shot at this trivia question here. Let's go Belichick, Reed, McCarthy, and I don't know that fourth one. I'll throw John Harbaugh out there.
You started strong with two. Harbaugh is incorrect, and McCarthy is just slightly behind them. It's a good guess.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We sure do appreciate it. Let's go next to Brad. You're on Sports Talk. Hi, Brad. Brad, you with us? Hello?
I'm going with John Gruden, Bill Belichick. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Listen through your phone, please.
All righty. I'm going with John Gruden, Bill Belichick, Mike Tomlin, and Andy Reid.
You got three out of four. You finished strong. Your first guess was the only miss.
Brad, we sure do appreciate it. Have a great night. Jimmy, repeat the question if you would.
Sean Payton is fifth among most wins in the NFL active coaches. Name the four that are ahead of Sean Payton.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. It's Derek who's up next. Hello, Derek.
I'm going to try McCarthy, Reed, Belichick, and seems like Pete Carroll's been up there quite a bit, and he's won a Super Bowl or two.
You got three out of four. Your only miss was your first guess, but you were correct in your last assessment there. So you got three out of four.
Thank you.
Derek, we sure do appreciate it. Have a great night. So let's go next to Eric. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Eric. Eric, you with us? Let's go to Bill. You're on Sports Talk. Hi, Bill.
Hey, he got my guesses earlier. That's why I was thinking Reed, Holmgren, Carroll, and that's I don't have another one. All right, I'll listen and see.
Yeah, it's not Holmgren. He's not active.
Yeah, but, Bill, we sure do appreciate your calling in. Let's go to Tyler. We're looking for a winner in tonight's Sports Fix at 6. Hi, Tyler. How are you?
Hey, guys. I think I got the answer.
Okay.
All right. It's Andy Reid, Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick, and what was the other one I was thinking?
Come on.
Pete Carroll.
Yes. You're off to a great start.
Yeah.
Well done.
Good job. Those are the ones ahead of him. So it's Belichick, it's Reed, it's Tomlin, it's Carroll. Those are the four coaches that are active that have more wins than Sean Payton. Tyler, congratulations.
That's right. Outstanding work. And if you want to go by career victories, Peyton is just two behind Mike Tomlin, 139 to 141. Pete Carroll with 144, Andy Reid with 222, and Bill Belichick with 304 victories. But, Tyler, you are our winner. You receive today's Golden Attaboy, and hang on the line so we can give you your audio reward as tonight's trivia champion on the Sports Fix at 6.
The champ is here!
I hate this idea that you're the best, because you're not. I'm the best. I'm the best in the world.
And I was here becoming the youngest WWE champion ever.
And I've heard it said that guys like you weren't made for my world. You were built for the WWE. And that's a good thing, because guys like you would not have made it in my world.
There's only one John Cena, and I'm still a bad, bad man. And my time is now. Recognize.
Well done, Tyler, and that takes care of today's Sports Fix at 6. When we return, we look forward to being joined by member of the Tigers organization, Vol for Life, Andre Lipsius. That's next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
To take the latest on Tennessee sports coverage with you anywhere you go, download the Sports Radio WNML app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and it is an absolute pleasure to have joined us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, Vol for Life, and member of the Detroit Tigers organization, Andre Lipsius. Andre, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Really appreciate your time. First of all, tell me, how is the family and everybody up in Virginia?
You know, everything's great, being with my family, especially, you know, my parents at I haven't got a chance to spend a lot of time in a while. You know, it's nice being home. Bad circumstances, but it's nice being around people you care about and, you know, spending some quality time with them. So everyone's doing well, and everything's all good at home.
Glad to hear that. You got to go through, or you were in the midst of going through, your first spring training, getting ready for your second year of pro ball. What was it like to find out that the curtain was coming down and that this was going to be put on hold for a while.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. We didn't really expect it. We knew, you know, things were happening. We didn't really, we were kind of not really in the loop of what was going to happen because everyone was making decisions. But, you know, we were about to get started full on with minor league spring training. We were wrapping up that little mini camp and, everything was going well and everything, we were really excited. Everyone was starting to come into town and then they just kind of called and we got sent back home. It was kind of nuts. Everything happened within 2 days from full on practice to you're going home. So it was just, you know, a crazy storm of things happening within a short time span.
Andre, what are you doing to try to stay in shape right now?
Yeah, well, luckily back home we have, you know, a couple places we can go hit, me and Luke, my twin brother, and we actually set up a little home gym, and the weather's been pretty nice out, so whether we want to do, you know, bike riding, running, all that stuff, it's we can do that with the family on our own. And we got a good little setup here where I'm at, so we're doing pretty well, and I'm doing all I can to stay in shape.
I think one of the hardest things to do in all of sports is to hit a pitch. And I wonder how difficult that is to simulate at this time.
Yeah, it's kind of tough trying to get, I guess, you know, that visual of seeing a live arm and pitches being thrown and, you know, tracking pitches, all that stuff. We try to mimic it as much as we can in the cage or you know, in practice, but it's just not the same once you get out there. So we're about to, you know, I'm about to ramp up here in the next couple of weeks and really try to do all I can to see pitches, see spin, and start to get back into, you know, live at bats and try to simulate things that I possibly can just to, so when I do get that call to come back down or go to a team that, you know, I'm ready to go. I don't want to miss a beat.
So when you were working with the big league club, you wore number 84. Is that correct?
I think I wore four different numbers.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
It's just kind of, it's you get the call on game day that you're going to go be with the big league team, and they put a jersey in your locker or give you a jersey to go out there, and that's what you wear. So it's kind of, you know, any given day, you get any jersey, it's going to be a high number, obviously, but. Yeah, you just put on a jersey that has a Detroit D on the front and go on out there and play.
What was it like to get some time with the big club?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was eye-opening being with those big league guys, you know, seeing how mature they were strength-wise and at the same time seeing how they act and got to be around some guys that are some pretty big names, guys who have really, you know, been in the league for a long time and gone through everything. So it was so cool and so eye-opening just being up there and getting a chance to be up there. And it was I was very thankful I got the chance to, you know, go out there and, you know, play the game I love with guys that I idolize watching on TV. And it was just an eye-opening experience being able to play at that level and go out there.
They've had a really nice connection with the University of Tennessee for a while when you look at their draft picks. Did you get to spend much time with Kristen Stewart?
Yeah, he was out there, I think, three of the five times I was out there. And, you know, we always talk about Tennessee, whatnot. We were both keeping up with, you know, how the Vols were doing. And we just talked about that a little bit, got a chance to talk about doing stuff in the off season, you know, going back to Tennessee, all that stuff. So he's one of the nicest guys to talk to. So it's nice having him there, especially. So it was cool being around him. He's a big leaguer, so it's a little bit different in terms of stature, but you would never know if you talk to him because he just treats you like, you know, a regular human being that he just wants to talk to.
What was it like to make that transition last year to pro ball, and what were some of the bigger lessons you learned when you were playing with Western Michigan?
Yeah, some of the things is you're playing baseball every day, so there's no time to pout, and there's no time to get down on yourself because you're playing that very next day. And if you're thinking about the past, and you're gonna stay in the past, and you're not gonna move on to the future. So, you know, the mental side was kind of the biggest deal for me, I guess you could say. When you're playing every single day, it's tough to you know, keep on going and finding that groove and all that stuff. So, you know, it wasn't the biggest jump you'd think, pitching wise or playing wise, because you know the SEC is in my opinion is as good as it gets. So, you know, you're seeing the best guys from there that got drafted, and then on top of that, you're seeing guys that get a chance to go, you know, do their dream out of high school or, you know, a smaller school. So you're getting the best. It's like seeing a Friday night game every night, especially up in Western Michigan. It was an awesome experience. They fill out the stadium every single night, and it was an awesome crowd to play in front of, and I had a great time up there. I still get to play the game I love every single day, so it's crazy. You get paid to play a game, so I'm having fun with it, and I'm doing everything I can to play it as long as I can.
Yeah, you kind of touched on what I was going to ask you. People talk so much about how the SEC gets football players ready for the NFL. Well, it sounds to me like the SEC in baseball can provide just as much of a preparation for pro baseball, correct?
Yeah, just the only thing is, you know, there's a big difference between getting away with metal bats and wood bats. So the SEC, yes, they have, you know, a different style of arms. They're big power guys, so you're not going to see anyone that throws harder than people in the SEC per se, but you're going to see guys that pitch a little bit different, that either know how to pitch or are learning how to pitch, because they're calling their own games now, and it's based on the catcher and what his tendencies are too. So that's the only difference. SEC is mostly, I would say, you know, coaches are calling pitches, whatnot. There are a few exceptions, but it's pitchers throwing with their best pitches. It's not based on count. It's not based on, you know, it's not based on what the coach or manager wants it now. It's based on what they think they can throw to get you out at any given time. So the SEC prepares you in terms of speed and power and the speed of the game, in terms of you can't make a mistake or people are going to, you know, expand on it. But it's a whole new experience in terms of people you're playing against. You're getting to play against everyone all over the world. It's not just, you know, America or whatnot. But, the SEC was a great thing for me, and I think the Cape Cod's also a really good, helper to, you know, prepare you for pro ball. But it's just a different animal when you get to pro ball, because you're playing every day with, you know, guys from all ages, from all over the world. So it's just a whole new experience that I'm really thankful I got to be a part of.
So where do you feel like you need to improve to take that next step?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm working on overall strength in general. Of course, you just want to get stronger and faster or whatnot. But, you know, I'm really working hard to expand the, I guess, the ability of my mental side of the game, to try to get better at that and just in general be better day in and day out. I don't want to have ups and downs. I want to be consistent throughout and know that every single day I'm going to be the same player that I am on a Tuesday as I am on a Friday or Saturday. I don't want there to be a dip if I'm going 0 for 20 or if I'm 20 for 20. So I'm trying to, you know, get with that. Improve my flexibility was a big thing, and trying to improve my mobility, because mobility is a really big deal, especially when you have such a long season. So trying to improve that so I can keep my body at tip-top shape throughout the whole season. I still worked with, you know, Quentin Eberhardt this fall in trying to improve that, and I think it helped a lot. And I felt really good going into spring training, felt good throughout spring training, so I was feeling really good about the work I put in throughout the fall and winter to get ready for a season.
Where do they have you playing?
Yeah, it's still up in the air. I'm spending most of my time now at second and third, but it's still split, and they told me to be ready for anything. So I'm gonna keep working at everything I can and just make sure that I'm ready for wherever they put me, wherever I'm playing.
You were a big part of Tennessee getting to play 61 games last year to the SEC tournament, returned to the NCAA tournament. You then played in 67 games in A-ball. How did you hold up for 128? Was that the most you'd ever played in a year?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's crazy that we went from, you know, regionals, you waited about a week and a half, and then you were playing again. I mean, it was nuts for me that, because I've never played every single day for the span of 2 months before, and that was kind of eye-opening in terms of my body. But now I'm trying to understand what I can do to better my body so I can fully feel good, you know, as good as I possibly can. You're never going to be 100 throughout that many games, but you want to be as close as you possibly can and try to understand your body, because everyone's different in terms of how much strength training you need, how much stretching you need, how many swings you need day in and day out. So it's, you want to be ready for the game, but at the same time, you don't want to overdo it so your body starts to break down. So it's just trying to find that balance. And, it was definitely a lot of games, but I know there's many more in a full season. So I'm trying to figure out what I can do to make myself better and make my body feel good so I'm ready for it.
You're the number 24 prospect in the organization. What's it like to be in that top 25 and to kind of be in the Tigers' plans as you are?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I really, you know, enjoy spending time with a lot of the guys that are on that prospect list, as well as the guys from my draft class. And then on top of that, all the coaches are, and, you know, everyone within the organization knows that, you know, we're trying to be as good as we possibly can in the next few years. And I'm really happy that they see me as a guy that, you know, will help them out. And they know that my intentions are to play the game with heart, and intentions are always, you know, be positive, do as much as I can to be really good at this game and, you know, help out the organization especially. So it's awesome, you know, being on that list. And, you know, you can't look too much into it, but at the same time, it's a good peace of mind in the back of your head that, you know, you some gratitude for things you're doing, and keeps you on the right track to keep your head right. And you can look at it either way. If you're not on that list, it makes you work harder. Or if you're on that list, you know that what you're doing and how hard you're working is showing up, and you just want to keep on going. So it's nice being on that list. A lot of the guys on that list I'm friends with, and especially, you know, just being around everyone in the Tigers organization, it's just awesome. I guess being around all those guys and being around the coaches that help us get to that point. So everything's looking up right now, and I'm ready to get back going.
How cool is it that there is a Bowman Chrome Andre Lipsius baseball card?
Yeah, that was one of the craziest experiences for me. Never had a baseball card. You know, it's always been a goal. You know, growing up, I collected baseball cards, and it's so cool to finally see one with your name on it that has your stats, that's your face, and it was just eye-opening. So it was – that's an experience I'll never forget when I finally got to see those cards, and it's like, oh, it's me, you know. And it's still crazy to me that my name's on a baseball card, and I'm the one that people are, you know, trying to get. It's a lifelong dream for me to have, you know, my own baseball card. So it was an awesome, you know, I guess, gift to receive.
What's it like to see the Lipsius clan outfitted in Tiger fan wear? Because I'm sure that's the case now, right?
Yeah, my parents, I just gave my brother a sweatshirt that he can wear around to, you know, everyone, whether it's my nieces, my parents, my brother, everyone's got something Detroit. So it's cool to see that, you know, they've always been so supportive, and I'm sure you know that too. And, you know, no matter what team we play on, no matter, you know, where we are, they're always going to support us and do the best they can to support us. So I'm really glad that I have, you know, my family to, you know, have that support staff that I think is really important, especially for me. And it's cool seeing that we still got some orange, some orange with that Detroit orange, or yeah, the Detroit orange, but they don't have to switch completely. They still got some orange to wear.
And lastly, certainly appreciate your time. What was it like to see Luke get back after it this year for his senior year, which he now gets another year of eligibility? But what was it like to see Tennessee get off to that start they did, get that win over number one Texas Tech? I'm sure it was fun to watch from afar.
Yeah, I was watching almost every game, and it was awesome to see Luke doing so well. And then on top of that, seeing all these guys that, I hope I could impart some wisdom on last year, and seeing these guys really grow up, and people like Jake Rucker, who I was close with in the infield, Max Ferguson close with in the infield, and then seeing people like Zach Daniels, just people were just exploding, and it was so awesome to see. I was jacked up from watching all the games, seeing all the guys that I was with last year, and they're doing so well, and they were really just, eye-opening or opening some people's eyes that were down them. So it was awesome to see those guys, especially because, as a part of you, you're always going to be involved for life. So it was awesome seeing those guys play. And I know they were in the right hands with, Tony Elander and Ross, of course, Q. You can't forget Q, but all of them are, doing so many things for those guys, and it really shows. This is third year, and it was just awesome to see those guys just tearing people up and doing what they do.
Andre, we really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences. Just keep working. I hope everybody stays safe, and we look forward to seeing you on the diamond, hopefully sooner rather than later. But take care, and we look forward to catching up with you again in the future.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. That's Ball for Life. Andre Lipsius, as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
You know how to pass the time when you're on the job. With 45 minutes of sports every hour. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams of John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. And, Jimmy, it's been something to see that with seasons canceled and coming to a sudden and quick end, now 3 weeks ago, I've been pleased to see how many coaches have stayed active, have taken the time to be a part of videos and different things like that, just to either recap their season, say thank you for the support, and just really try and give stay connected to Tennessee fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And that has been interesting to watch that. And I think that most fans are just looking for a sliver of something, some good news, something that they can latch on to a little bit. And I do think the coaches have done a nice job of showing their appreciation, including the director of track, John. I thought Beth Sullivan, when she issued a thank you to the fans, did a nice job with that.
Yeah, so why don't we go to that? This was Tennessee director of track, Beth Alford Sullivan, talking about the season and a thank you.
Hello, everyone. This is Beth Alford Sullivan, the director and head coach of men's and women's track and field and cross country at the University of Tennessee. The last couple weeks have been a whirlwind for our athletes, coaches, and staff, so I'd like to say a big thank you to all who have shared their words of encouragement and shown support with us as we navigate this current reality. Most of our young people are back home, all are safe and all are healthy, and I've asked them to hunker down, remain focused, and do their best as scholars, champions, and leaders. 2020 was off to an amazing start for us, and there is no doubt that some of our dreams and aspirations were left unable to be fulfilled. I want to take this opportunity today to give a great shout out to our 7 NCAA Indoor National Championship qualifiers. Alexis Duncan and Dominique Turner, both qualifiers in the 60-meter hurdles, Latavia Maines and Joe Maxwell in the shot put, Kerry McLeod in the long jump and the triple jump, Alani Sutton in the triple jump, and Daryl Sullivan as a national leader in the high jump. Since the championships were canceled, this group of young people has stayed positive and has shown an inspiring amount of resolve in these unprecedented times. They continue to lead by setting a great example for our younger athletes on our team to stay the course and to keep one's focus on our goals. I am proud of how they represent Tennessee track and field every single day. Everyone within our program, athletes, coaches, and support staff, have been committed to making Tennessee an elite, well-rounded contender at the SEC and national level. We took great strides towards these goals this year, as my men's team was ranked number 10 in the country heading into the NCAA Indoor Championships. We had our best team finish at the Indoor SEC meet in over a decade, backing up our cross-country teams in the fall, where my Lady Vols also had their best finish in the SEC since 09. This shortened indoor season was filled with several accomplishments and awards. Currently, Kerry McLeod is selected as a finalist for the National Field Athlete of the Year, while Associate Head Coach Travis Geffert is a finalist for the National Assistant Coach of the Year. Kerry was also selected by the SEC Head Coaches as the SEC Field Athlete of the Year. I'm proud to say that our senior captain, Daryl Sullivan, is the current number one ranked high jumper in the world and has been on the watch list for the Barrowman Award twice this year. We brought home 8 medals from the Indoor SEC Championship, and we broke 4 school records, 3 freshman records, and 24 top 10 marks in our program were set this indoor season alone. I could go on and on with track stats, but most importantly, this team had a focused intensity that is unique and fun, and one that leads programs to the top of podiums. This strong team culture has helped the team members move through this difficult time, and combined with positive energy from my coaching staff, I can confidently say that we have the best people in place to move forward and come out even stronger for our future. So thank you, Vol Nation, for all the support and all the encouragement. Thank you to our campus leadership and to the athletics administration for the guidance through these uncharted waters. Even though it is disappointing to lose the outdoor season of 2020, the men and women of Tennessee track and field and cross country are prepared and resilient, and will never let go of our Tennessee tradition of being champions. We can't wait for next year, and let's go, Vols.
So comments from Tennessee Director of Track and Field and Track Head Coach Beth Alford Sullivan. And Jimmy, impressive to hear. One, the individual performances, as well as some of the top team performances that Tennessee has seen in quite some time.
Well, and I thought on the men's side, I thought the outdoor season could – Tennessee could do well. I thought they could do well in the indoor nationals. But I thought on the outdoor season, you had a high jumper and a triple jumper that was a contender to win both. You had an outstanding shot putter. You had a tremendous high jumper. So you had a high jumper, long jumper, triple jumper, shot put, all of them with the potential to win at the NCAA level. And that's how you score well. Often cases, you don't rack up a lot of depth points. But if you've got high elite athletes like Tennessee on the men's side did, then that gives you a chance to score high as a team. And so I think it's it was tough that those athletes got robbed of that, because I thought they could have had a top 10 finish outdoors in the NCAAs, if not a top 5 finish.
Yeah, it is such a shame, because they were set up to score in very specific events. As you mentioned, you had just one of the international, I guess, most successful performers of the year, but never got a chance to get anything going outdoor, never got a chance to compete in the indoor national championships. But it will be something to see whether or not they can continue to build on the momentum that you've seen from both the Vols and the Lady Vols, whether it be cross country or track. And it's taken a little while to kind of get this upswing, but I kind of think that you can add track and field to that list of programs that are either on the rise or are up there competing for SEC as well as SEC championships, as well as on a national scale.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, as far as how you might finish on the national level with elite performers, they probably still need to build up more good athletes, more good performers in some of these other sports to perhaps help with an SEC championship. But, yeah, I think they've got some tremendous athletes that, as you mentioned, they've had some world-class efforts, either in the long jump, triple jump, or high jump. So I do think they're going in the right direction. They just need to add a few more pieces.
We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
A real woman could stop you from drinking.
It has to be a real big woman.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Segment to today's edition of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
And John, there are a couple of eye-popping numbers I wanted to mention. According to a report from Athletic Directors U, they went back 15 years to see about how much they were paying in buyouts at the Power Five schools for football and men's basketball coaches only. That total number of buyouts for all the Power Five schools dating back 15 years, over $490 million. And in 2018 alone, when there were a lot of firings that occurred, Tennessee paid out $11.5 million alone that year. Now, what will happen is, in a situation like that, if you fire a coach, let's say it's Butch Jones, and you owe him $8.25 million, they lump that into 1 year, not spread out over 4 years, even though you may be spreading the payment out. So Tennessee paid out $11.5 million in 2018 alone. Arizona State was at $12.8 million that year, UCLA at $12.5 million, and Florida at $12.2 million, which I thought was pretty stunning. Now, with Tennessee's numbers, they only went back 7 years. They didn't have the data to go back 15 years. But in the 7 years that they looked at, Tennessee's average payout for coaches, $2.88 million a year. Auburn was at $2.4 million. So Tennessee by far the most in the nation. Third on that list was UCLA at $1.96 million. And then Texas was at $1.9 million. So that's a lot of money paying out in severance pay to coaches for football and men's basketball. The other number I thought was interesting, and I'll just read these quickly. If you go back over the last 15 years, the most amount of payouts for football and men's basketball coaches, Nebraska had a total of $27.9 million, Auburn $26.1 million, Florida $25.335 million, Kansas $23.8 million, UCLA $23.6 million, Arizona State $22.4 million. Now, almost all of those are over 15 years, and then here comes Tennessee in the ninth spot of all that at $20.2 million, over a seven-year period. Another note I thought was pretty interesting that I saw, Erica Brown, Lady Vols All-America swimmer, a finalist for the Honda Award. What they do in the Honda Award, that goes to an outstanding female performer in a variety of sports, but she's a finalist for the top female swimmer in the nation. So congratulations to Erica Brown in regard to that that award. So I don't know when they're going to announce the winner of that, but she is a finalist for that. So I wanted to point that out about Erica Brown.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that she'll be in the running. What an incredible career. And she's certainly one of those you feel for, because I don't think there's any question she could very well have been on her way to Tokyo for the Olympics. We've got a few minutes left in the program. Why don't we get a call from Roger? You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Roger.
Yeah. Hey, John, Jimmy. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Yeah, doing fine, John, Jimmy. I just wanted to ask y'all about golf. I know I asked you, Tisa talked to you about it, but that's one I get to ask you about this. But golf, I just wanted to ask you, the ones that the ones that, that play golf and the Masters, like Tiger, all the fans. I just want to ask you about them. The ones that can't play in golf right now. What can they do? All the professional golf and the tournament they can do. And also, what they do? What they can do right now? While they're waiting on playing golf.
You see them doing a number of different things, like you see all the other athletes whose lives are on hold right now when it comes to being able to go out and compete. Some of them are making fun videos that you can watch them doing trick shots. And then others are, we just talked with Andre Lipsius. He's got a couple of places he can go hit. Jimmy, they'll take some swings, whether it's an indoor driving range, which I'm sure a lot of them have, or some of them probably have at their houses a hole or two that they can go out and play. So I think they're doing what everyone else is doing, and that's trying to stay as ready as they can.
Yeah, and then a lot of them might have a net they could hit into. You see that from time to time. And I'm sure they're looking for a putting green so they can work on their putting and try to stay in shape in that regard. And even if you do that, and I think it's good to try to continue that muscle memory, there's just nothing like jumping in there in a tournament because there's a different amount of pressure that comes with that. But I'm sure they're out there hitting a lot of golf balls and trying to stay sharp with their swing, with their chipping, and with their putting.
Oh yeah, you're right. So I'd be curious to see what happens now. You think golf, when it goes back to normal, is golf playing at all? Is it over completely right now?
No, well, I'll tell you this, and Roger, we sure do appreciate it. There are actually a couple of circuits, Jimmy, that are still competing. Out in Arizona, you have, I guess it is the Cactus Tour, which is for women, and the Outlaw Tour for men. They're continuing to play tournaments. They are practicing as best they can, social distancing and things like that. There are no spectators that are allowed to watch, but you have some circuits that are still firing and playing.
You do. But as far as some of the bigger tournaments, so we know the British Open has been canceled. They are looking at trying to move some of those other events around as best they can. There's a chance we won't have any of the majors played. I really don't know whether that's going to be the case. It depends on what happens over these next few weeks or maybe a couple of months about trying to get something in. But I do know that they haven't been able to get some of these bigger tournaments in. And a lot of those require national travel. Maybe in Arizona they can confine that to a few people that live in the area. But when you've got people coming from all over the world, it makes it a lot harder to have a golf tournament or a tennis tournament.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But I do think that that golf is a sport that is probably better served to make an earlier return, with the exception of, as you mentioned, the concern that would be bringing in people from different parts of the country where they might be under a greater restriction. But that's going to do it for today's edition of Sports Talk. Want to say thank you to all our guests. Want to say thank you to Sam and Ben for pushing all the right buttons. And thanks for you to listening. This is Sports Talk.